We're constantly getting asked if we're a throuple, and I always say that like living with a married gay couple and being a, and not being a throuple is the most radical thing I've ever done in Brooklyn. But
welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have the return of Jake Cornell, the amazing comedian and heartthrob who was on this podcast in the literal first few months that it ever existed. But before I talk to that delicious man, yes, the rumors are true. The lineup has been announced for That's a Gay Ass Live Show in New York City. It's a bit of a pinch me moment. Anna Gasteyer, Matt Rogers, and Peppermint are the three panelists competing for cock at That's a Gay Ass Live Show. That's the champion of character actress knowledge. They've already selected their character actresses that they will be representing, and you are not going to want to miss it. In fact, a lot of you have already purchased tickets, which I thank you so kindly. It takes some of the stress off. But the show is just about 2 weeks away, 2 weeks from this Friday. So buy your tickets before they sell out. And also, you know, help me take less Klonopin. Another update is I'm going to be taking the month of July off from posting on the main feed for the podcast. I'm still going to have the Patreon going strong with gay ass sex diaries and conversations with Matt and special things for the summer, but I'm taking a break from the main podcast to take some time to rework some of the BTS stuff. I'm going to look for an editor. I'm going to look for maybe some help with marketing, blah, blah, blah. It's been, you know, a amazing road, but your girl is trying to level up and I need some helpful reinforcements to make that happen. I will also say that if you yourself are an audio girlina and you're looking for an editing job, hit your girl up here because I'm going to start that search very soon. But we're going to get into this episode with Jake Cornell. If you're wondering if I inappropriately tell him how hot he is, spoiler alert, I do. I also asked Jake how to slide into his DMs. He gives really good intel on that. And we talk about the time he could not speak in front of a celebrity that us gays adore, and how Jake found his gay family in New York. It's a very special episode. I'm so happy that Jake is back, and I'm even happier that you are here. Enjoy. Jake Cornell is back on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Do you know, Jake, the first time you were on, when it was calendarily?
It must have been 2022, 2021.
Jake, it was April 27th, 2021. It was the third.
Holy shit.
It was the 13th episode of That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And now we are in the year of our Lord, 2024. It's been over 3 years.
Well, congrats on you for having this podcast be so successful and run for that long.
Well, I will take that in and say thank you. I do think the success of it still being here is a success. You know, has it made six figures? No, but who needs money? Not me.
Who needs money?
Do you know what musical I just referenced?
No. If you'll remember from our previous episode, I'm not the biggest musical person.
No, I do. That's why I thought you were maybe yes-anding it, but I think you just have a rhythm inside of you that just is natural.
I have a history in improv, but I don't. Wait, what musical did you?
Who needs money? Not me. Who needs fortune or fame? That's point me to the mic. I know. The life. It's the Wild Party, and it's a niche.
That's the name of the musical?
It's called The Wild Party, and it's a bit of a niche.
I've never even heard of that.
The girl, if IYKYK to the musical theater Fagatrini is listening. So the funny thing about that it's been so long since you've done this podcast is I just want to have a moment and congratulate you and I both on just like, I feel like we've come so far, and I want to take a moment that I don't normally do because when I first started this podcast, I had such debilitating imposter syndrome, and only recently has it started to die down a bit. And I just want to take a moment to thank you for being part of that journey and say mazel to your exciting journey as well.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice. I definitely, when we did that, had a lot of imposter syndrome as well. And it's been a journey of getting rid of it, like breaking through it as well.
Truly. So that's very nice to hear. Well, it's also funny when we think about historically what was happening in the world. So I went to listen to a bit of the episode because I was curious about, you know, who you blamed your gayness on, which we'll get into. But in our interview, I talked about how Matt and I had still not eaten inside of a restaurant.
Oh my God, right. Because it was like that period of time.
Literally, it was like COVID had started Christ. A year prior, and I kind of had forgotten how long I did not.
Yeah, I would have been in April of 2021, I would have still been working in restaurants like full time.
Wow.
So that's wild.
Yeah.
I didn't, that's crazy.
So when I did go back to listen, you have a gorgeous same-sex kiss that turned you gay. But before I get into that, I just want to ask, how is your June going, RE Pride? What's the vibe for Pride 2024, Jay Cornell?
I'm loving it. I have, I've been having a great June so far. It's been very, very fun. I am going to Provincetown for like a few days in a few weeks, in like a week and a half, which I'm loving. And then obviously we have Pride weekend. I'm not a big ticket buyer for Pride. It's just not part of my journey to buy the like different party tickets that went on sale in like truly April.
Truly.
I tend to not do that. I think it's such a game of like hedging your bets about which is the thing that you're going to want to actually do. And then there's always this sort of Pokemon baseball card trading situation of like, I have tickets to this thing and you have tickets to this thing, but all my friends are going to that thing, so I need to get tickets. And that all stresses me out. And so I kind of tend to go to the more like open bar situations, like, you know, a different, like the classic Brooklyn gay bars I'm always at, but just like their pride parties, I think is more where I tend to land.
Have you purchased any tickets this year?
No, truly not a single ticket has been purchased.
Good for you. I'm also, I'm learning that my relationship to Pride is similar in that if I overbook, it will take me literally years to get over that. And I'm learning it firsthand because last year, you know, LA has two fucking prides. There's WeHo Pride and then there's LA Pride, and it's two weekends in a row. And we did.
Yeah, so one just happened, right?
Yeah, last weekend was WeHo. This week, now we're currently sitting in LA Pride. And
gotcha.
Kylie performed at WeHo Pride. Kesha performed a different night at WeHo Pride. And last year we went to all three nights of WeHo. We did a couple of days of LA Pride, and it truly ruined me. So I did one single ticket this year. I went to the WeHo Pride. I went to one of the shows. It happened to be Kesha.
Right.
It happened to be a free ticket.
There you go.
And she slayed. But then a few friends were like, so what else are you doing? And I was like, hon, that was it.
Totally. I'll definitely be out and about most of the days, but I don't, the ticket situation. And like, you know, perhaps a ticket befalls me to the thing, but like, we'll see.
Truly, truly. Well, I am very jealous of your P-Town journey. I've never been, but I can't wait for the third time you come on this podcast. I can't wait to tell you about my first time, hopefully, when you come on again.
Yeah.
Well, when we did last talk and I asked you, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe? You blamed it on two 90s television girlinas, Sarah Michelle Gellar and Selma Blair. And you specifically referenced when they won Best Kiss for Cruel Intentions.
For Cruel Intentions, yeah.
You said it was almost so hot that it was gross, but then it came back to hot and it was the first same-sex kiss you saw. So if that was your herstory, I'm going to pivot to a new question that I sometimes ask at the end of episodes to guests. And this is going to be your gay ass podcast question. Jay Cornell, what is currently keeping you gay today? Is it a television series? Is it a pornography?
Oh, wow.
Is it a meme? Who is doing it to keep you a homosexual?
What is keeping me gay right now? That's such an interesting question. I think it's Brooklyn gay bars. Like, I think that's what it is. Like, I think since I did the podcast 3 years ago, I moved into an apartment where now I live with two other gay guys.
Yeah.
And we've really become like a clique and like a really close friend group. And like, I've always had Like, I have a best friend from childhood who's gay, who I'm still very, very close with. But I've never had, until these past couple years, like, a gay friend group that's, like, me and a group of gay guys that, like, do stuff together. And finding that has, like, really changed my life in a lot of big ways. And I think finally having, like, my gay family and, like, my gay crew and, like, going out and, like, just doing it has made my life so much gayer.
Yeah.
You know, like, before the pandemic, I was, like, very involved at, like, the Upright Citizens Brigade, which, like, God bless and I love. But, like, a lot of my friends were straight, you know, because, like, Even the gay people I was hanging out with, we were all going to straight bars because those were, like, the improv bars, you know, like, that was more my social life. And it wasn't that. It was the restaurant world where I still have a lot of friends who I really love. But also, it's, like, a mixture of straight, heavily straight. And now having this, like, predominantly gay friend group where my default plan is usually, like, we're going to a gay bar or we're going to do a gay thing has just made me so much gayer and happier in so many ways. And, like, my only regret is not having that in my life sooner, but so thankful I have it now, you know? So I'd say that is what's keeping me gay.
It's such a beautiful answer, and my life has mirrored that in many ways. And, you know, on the Patreon, we either do, like, the gay-ass sex, or we talk about sex life. Mm-hmm. There's also an episode where we talked about making gay friends and finding your circle, and it was a really... I got some amazing messages back from that. And so this sort of harkens to that question of, you know, when you talk about moving in with these gays and finding your gay family, it's like, I'm sure there are people listening who are probably simultaneously thrilled for you and so jelly, because it's giving sitcom, it's giving it's giving montage. Can you tell me, how did the moving in with these gays happen and your friendship with them? What was the blossom? How did it start to, how did it get to be family now?
I was living with my ex, and then we broke up, and and we were living together. So, and it was like, oh, well, now I have to move. And I posted on close friends on Instagram, and I wasn't super close with either of them. My roommates are a married couple, but I was friendly with them both, like, quite friendly, but not, like, super close. And one of them had a job upstate, and so they were splitting time between Brooklyn and this upstate place. Mm-hmm. And they have a 2-bedroom, and so I think they were kind of like, oh, well, we're only in the apartment half the time. So when they saw me post on close friends, like, I'm looking for a place, they kind of were like, oh, well, he could move in, and, like, that would be fun and whatever. And I don't think any of us thought it would be, like, a super long-term thing, but then, like, we just clicked, like, very quickly. It was like, oh, this, like, works. And we all became really close, and I became close with their other friends, and we just kind of, it just blossomed naturally. I think we're all, they're restaurant people, and I think my restaurant background kind of lent itself to, like, we all like going out a lot. We all like doing the same things. I think that the biggest key is that we're all quite generous and hospitable people. So, like, a lot of, like, oh, I'm gonna make you dinner tonight, I'll go buy some wine for you. Like, it's very, like, there's no, like, tab being kept for, like, little expenses like that. It's very, like, easy and stuff, and I think that it just kind of naturally blossomed that way.
That is so gorgeous. And this couple, being on a gay podcast and an investigative journalist like myself, has there ever been any in your friendship? I know sometimes some of us gays can get out of our system and then just be friends. Have you ever had any sexual tension, or was it always platonic with them?
We're like platonic. We're like a friend group. We're constantly getting asked if we're a throuple. And I always say that, like, living with a married gay couple and not being a throuple is the most radical thing I've ever done in Brooklyn. But, like, we're constantly, but no, to the point where sometimes I'm like, I worry that I'm like, it's like affecting my dating game that, like, people think I'm in a throuple where I just live with two gay guys.
It's funny you say that, because one of my other questions, I literally have bolded on my list of questions, Jake has become a sex pot is bolded, and then dash question is, what are your DMs like? And I'm not someone who shies away from giving a very forward compliment. So let me tell you, Jay Cornell, you're fucking hot. And
oh, thank
the
you.
The way you are able to post such funny stuff online and then sprinkle in a delicious hairy chest or, you know, sturdy thigh. What is happening in those DMs, and what is the way to get Jay Cornell's attention?
Okay. I definitely get some very lovely DMs. That's without question. But if you want to know how to get my attention, here's the thing, baby. If we don't know each other and you're going to send me a flirty DM, you got to make your profile not private.
Ooh.
Like, what are we doing?
What do you think I'm going to do?
Like, if you're going to hit me up and if you're going to shoot your shot, God bless. Like, there's nothing wrong. Because it's like, I don't think there's anything wrong with sending a DM. I can ignore it if I'm not into it, but if I'm into it, whatever. But it's like, if your profile is private, we don't really have much to do here. So I don't really know what your strategy is. I think it's a very strange thing.
It's a losing game.
It's like when people link their Instagram to their Scruff or their Grindr, but it's private. I'm like, what is the point? Like, what are you doing?
What are we doing? It's also, I find interesting when someone's probably trying to DM you and they want to straddle the line between being thirsty but also being a fan. Does it ever turn you off if they're blurring the line between we are two equals who should fuck versus like I am your audience?
Sure. I mean, I think that like there's an element, like there's a couple things about it. One, something I've like learned over the past few years as that's become more of a thing is like I genuinely think that if someone knows who I am before we meet or like when we meet, I genuinely think that there is like no comfortable way to bring it up. Like, yeah. I just don't think there exists like a natural way to bring it up. And so I have empathy for that. So I always say like when people are like, is this weird that it's like, no, there's literally no normal way to bring that up.
Right.
Like, so I don't hold it against people if it's like, if it feels a little clunky, because I just think it's like an innately clunky thing. Like if someone has watched my videos, it's like, oh, I think you're funny. Great. That's totally fine. If someone seems like they're obsessed or like really, really in, then that becomes like a little bit of a different thing. I would not say that that happens often,
right?
But occasionally it does. And then it's like, yeah, whatever, like that we're not going to ever be able, that kind of creates that sort of thing where it's like, we'll probably never, it'll take a lot for us to get to know each other well, because there's such a discrepancy between us and that, or between our experiences of each other. But that doesn't happen super often.
Yeah. I'm sure it's an obstacle to jump over, because you have to now, okay, address that someone enjoys your stuff, which is so sweet. But then it's like, how do we now interact as two equals that, and you kind of have to almost catch up to like,
I think most people in this day and age know that when you experience someone in media, in television, in film, in the internet, whatever it is, that like that is in a way separate from who they are, you know? And so like if people can understand like, oh, I've seen his comedy, I don't know him though, you know? And if that line is very clear, then it's like totally easy. Then it's like not an issue at all. You know, you can love my work if you know that it's like not who I actually am. I think occasionally someone will kind of speak to you. I play a character in a lot of my videos, but like it is like a heightened version of myself in certain ways. So if someone's sort of speaking to me as though they know me from that, then that can kind of be weird. But again, it's very rare that it happens.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I think that it is just a testament to the comedy you do put out that people really, you know, feel seen by. Like, if I may reference a video you posted recently, was you're at Club Coming doing stand-up, and the wedding attire that you were recently directing was Woodland Meadow Excellence. And the person in the crowd who you said, what would you wear? And she was like, something about a prairie dress and espadrilles. It was a beautiful clip, if I may say.
Thank you.
But because you have grown this beautiful audience, and I have to have one TMZ question, what is the biggest celebrity interaction that you've had that has really tickled your pink hole?
I can tell you the most starstruck I've ever been.
Please.
Which was, I ended up in someone's Broadway dressing room. This was last year. I went to go see some, oh, I guess it was off Broadway at the time. I went to go see someone I know in a play, someone who is like a very famous, successful actor. Uh-huh. And I went to go see him in a play that he was in, and they were like, I was given tickets to the show to go see this person I know in this play. And then they were like, oh, when the show's over, like, go down and meet this person, and then they'll take you to the dressing room to say hi. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And so I, like, brought my friend, and my dumb ass kind of thought, like, we would be the only people. Like, it didn't occur to me, like, no, this is a giant theater. More than one person he knows is coming to see him tonight, and they're all going to be brought down.
Uh-huh.
So, like, we start getting brought down to the dressing room, and, like, slowly but surely, like, more and more very famous celebrities start getting tagged onto this group. And we were kind of like, oh, this is a little intense. Like, but not in, like, intense, but, like, just, like, funny. But, like, we were totally, me and my friend were, like, totally holding it together. Because, like, I see celebrities all the time, and it's not, I don't really get starstruck that often.
Yeah.
And we were, like, talking with some of them, and it was, like, super nice. It was just, it was, like, funny kind of to us, because we were just, like, very much the not famous people in this, like, group of very famous people. But we were, like, holding on, and we were, like, totally fine. But then when we were in the dressing room, we were talking, and everyone was, like, it was, like, normal and very chill. And then Anne Hathaway walked in. And here's the thing that no one tells you about Anne Hathaway, is that she really fucking looks like Anne Hathaway. And that's the only way I can put it. Like,
yeah.
She walked in, and I actually, like, couldn't, I the reason I say I don't get starstruck is because until that moment, I was like, oh, if this is what being starstruck is, and I've never experienced this before, because I actually, me and my friend lost the ability, because we were having a conversation, like, with all these other people around us that were, like, talking to each other. Like, we weren't talking with all the other people in the room. It was just me and my friend having a convo.
Yeah.
We both immediately started doing the thing where we were just, like, saying prepositions and, like, trying to start sentences, but, like, nothing was, I would be like, yeah, so it's just interesting when you think about, yeah, I don't know. It's just sometimes when you, like, we're, like, we couldn't, to the point where, like, after 4 minutes of it, I looked at her and I was like, we gotta go. Like, we have to leave. Like, it's not, we've been here a time. We've said hi to the people we need to say hi to. Like, we said thank you for the tickets. It's time to go. Like,
what other phrases, I just, like, lost the, what other phrases were you and your friend saying? So, like, in terms of,
look, literally that, like, literally that, like, you know, like, looking back, like, just nothing, like literally, like, garbage coming out of our mouths, because, like, we were so distracted by the fact that Anne Hathaway was standing near us. So yeah, that's probably the most starstruck I've been. Was,
well,
Anne,
now you know how people with ADHD feel, Jake. They can't.
Okay, well, it's hard.
Focus. Well, and Annie, you know, I can call her that. She, I feel like every time I picture Anne Hathaway anywhere in public, she's just constantly doing the dancing photos from Cannes.
Oh my god.
And she's, yeah, looking so fucking hot.
She's like one of, yeah, she's my Scorpio queen.
I love that. Can you, do you feel comfortable telling us any other names that were in that elevator? I just feel like it paints a picture.
I'm like, I don't think I'm supposed to.
Oh, thank you for the NDA.
I don't think I'm supposed to.
Well, off mic, I'll be like, why? I love that this elevator is embargoed.
Totally.
That's delicious. An Annie Hathaway, yeah, sighting. Another sighting that I saw is that you just hit your 10-year anniversary in New York City. Mazel tov.
I did. Yeah. A week ago today. Yeah.
And you're celebrating by selling out Joe's Pub. Now,
oh,
that is cuckoo ka-choo. If anybody listening does not know, Jake is doing Hey Big Guy. The July 9th show has sold out. But you have, did you add a second show on the 8th?
July 8th, there is a show. And also, it hasn't been announced yet, but I'll tell you here, if you're listening to this and you're not in New York, Hey Big Guy is going on tour this summer.
Yes!
All across America. So please get tickets when that gets announced. Like,
Jake.
Probably by the time this episode comes out.
Jake.
When is this coming out? Next week?
Yeah.
This is coming out next week? Okay, cool. So next week, that tour is getting announced. So please buy tickets if you live in the cities where the tickets, where the tour gets announced.
Jake, I'm quelling. That's so, so exciting.
Thank you.
Can we get in the weeds a little bit here? Because I...
Please.
I think that putting content on the internet, of course, is a huge fucking challenge. You're dealing with all these eyeballs and comments, but I think on another side of it, putting up a live show has a very different vulnerability. And like, I went through the same,
sure, yeah,
re-upping of imposter syndrome when I started doing the gay ass live show. So for Hey Big Guy, what has been the experience, mm-hmm, like to, okay, hey, here's the idea. Hey, I want to put it up. Hey, we're going to do Joe's Pub and now this tour. Can you walk through like the creative and sort of logistical professional journey?
Totally. Yeah. So like you said, I moved to New York 10 years ago and I've been doing comedy since I got here. I didn't start really, I kind of was very serious about improv at first, and then I transitioned over to stand up like 5 years ago. Yeah. Like four or five years ago. So I was just doing stand up a lot and had built up, like, I had my different bits that were like my really strong ones, and like just was kind of building out all my material.
Yeah.
And my agents booked me a couple hour long slots at like a couple clubs in like cities, like in one was in New York, one was in Pittsburgh, I think. And I think I did one other. But basically they were like, hey, like this club wants to have you do an hour. Like, do you want to do an hour? And I was like, sure. Like, to kind of like rise to the occasion of doing that. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed doing those shows, but I found when I was doing it, like I was like so excited to be like headlining and doing an hour, but like in the show, like when I was like, I was always saying like when I hit like the 45 minute mark, I in my mind was like, shut the fuck up, like stop talking, like yeah. How are you still talking? And I think it's because for me, I really enjoy when there's like a little bit of like a structure and a little bit of like a, not like a message, like I don't want like a moral, but I kind of like, I really get off on like the structure and like yeah. knowing that. And I just didn't think that my show had that back then. So then I kind of was like, I don't want to do any more hours. I want to get back to like really working on stand up and then figuring out when I do an hour, like what is like the container that will make these jokes I've been doing for the past few years? Like, what is the container I can put them all in that will like make it a very gratifying hour long show?
Yeah.
That's not like, cause I also didn't want it to feel like a solo show. Like, I didn't want it to feel like my like big sad, like it, I wanted it to be like, that's an hour of stand up.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Sure,
that
yeah.
just has like a name. So I kind of just like knew that that was what I wanted. And then I kind of just waited for that idea to hit. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't try to like sit down and like force it out. So I just like kept working, kept doing stuff. And then I had the idea. Well, I ran into a friend at a bar, and he was like, oh, like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm thinking about starting to work on my next show. And he was like, oh, like, if you did that, I would want to direct it. And he ended up not directing it because he ended up getting, like, too busy. But just, I think him saying, like, oh, I would be interested in directing that gave me a little bit of, like, a push to be like,
yeah.
oh, like, and I had, like, this loose idea. And then I ended up going on, I happened to also be, like, the next week going on vacation. So I just had, like, a lot of time that week to, like, write. And so I started thinking about the idea, this idea I'd had about this container that would kind of make the show, like, a larger piece. And the big chunks of the show are kind of like stand up that I've been doing for years at this point. So I was like, I know that like these chunks work.
Yeah.
Like I can do, like, I know that this 15 minute chunk, I know this 15 minute chunk, and I know this 15 minute chunk like work. So if I can string these together and put them and make jokes and bits in between them to make this like one thing, like I know it'll work as a show. So I did that. I booked a slot at Union Hall just to kind of be like, that'll be me to put it up. And I just need to make sure that this container works. Like I can, and like the stand up will work within it, but I just need to make sure that like the container works. And so I did that, and the container did work like quite well. And like the show's wasn't perfect then. Like
yeah.
I obviously like taped it, and you kind of watch it back and you move stuff. But I was like, once I knew that, I was like, okay, like let's go. I just want to, especially because like everything else in this industry is so like waiting for a million people to say yes, or like taking a million people's notes or da da da. So, but a live show, I think I was just like, oh, I'm the writer, the director, the executive producer. So I just want to make this thing and then tour it and make it better and better and better. So then once I did it once, I was like, okay, great. Like I want Joe's Pub. I want to get tour dates. Like, let's just really try. And we did, and it's been, I mean, knock on wood, going well. So we'll see.
Well, it's inspiring to me. I think that once you get out of your own way about like placing either expectation or pressure and let it be organic, and then kind of be, okay,
yeah.
now let's just fucking put it up and see. I think that's
100%.
a huge lesson. And, you know, full transparency, when I've seen your show, and also Matt and I were talking before we recorded how delicious the poster is for Hey Big Guy.
Oh, Hunter Kill. I work with this guy, yes. Hunter Ellenberger, and Deb Bozeman does all the photos. Their work is insane.
It's almost like a hot like Macy's catalog, like
that was the directive.
Yeah
it was
so,
like old men's sports catalogs.
And there's of course a pit shot that I need to reference. It's so yummy. But full transparency is that, you know, That's a Gay Ass Live Show is gonna be in New York now in what, 3 weeks, and it's,
oh my God, yay.
It's such an amazing show to do, but it's, between us girls, so much work, because it's like three panelists do the show, stand up, drag, backup.
Yeah, no, that's a lot.
So
that's a lot.
I'm trying to now start to build a show that's more stand up, solo, singing, whatever. And you are truly my inspiration of, like, you know, trying to put it up and then repeat it, make it better and better. And so again, next time we talk for this podcast, I'll tell you about being at the Dick Dock in P-Town, and then about my new show. And I think these are things that I am excited about manifesting.
Yes, I love that.
Well, again, I'll, you know, put it all in the description, but I'm excited for you to announce this tour and for people listening to buy and see you around this cunch. But I do want to ask you another gay-ass podcast question that sort of elevates...
Please.
The questions, since you've been on the pod before. Now, when we typically ask, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress.
Character actress,
I wanted to elevate to WYD. And sometimes in tech speak, that's like, what are you doing? But for today's gay-ass podcast episode with Jay Cornell, it is, who's your diva? If you can only choose diva of all divas, this is a diva who sees you. She is a part of you. And yeah, she can be dead. Jake, who is your diva?
Damn, this is hard because, like, it's hard because it's like, the answer has to be Lady Gaga, because, like, in terms of, like, which raised me and, like, who connected, like, it's Gaga for sure.
Gaga.
Because that was just because, like, my age, you know, like, when like, I saw the Monster Ball when I was 18 or when I was 17, like, I was like a teen, like, I was in high school when she did Paparazzi at the VMAs with the blood. Like, it's so, like, entrenched with, like, my early days of, like, coming out of the closet and being gay and, like, becoming who I am is, like, Gaga, that it's, like, it's that just sort of has to be the answer. But, like, it's hard, you know, right now, it's, like, I mean, like, the past two Beyonce albums, like, and that tour, like, it's hard to be, like, I don't want to discredit any of the other divas who I love so, so dearly, but I think the one that is, like, the most in my DNA is Gaga, you know?
Well, it's fun to watch your existential crisis when you have to choose one, and I think it really does say a lot about your love and benevolence towards our mothers, and I think that you're speaking from the heart, but when Gaga comes up, did you feel saddened, ostracized, happy, upset when her Nerd Tech commercials came out, or did you feel like it was all a part of God's plan?
I mean, on the one hand, it's like, I'm like, oh, interesting choice, like, interesting turn. I mean, at the same time, I'm doing DiGiorno ads on my Instagram, so it's like, who am I? Like, that's just the tea, you know what I mean? Like, that's the truth of it. Like, so I get it, you know. It'd be one I'm like, I guess, like, yeah, it's weird. Like, it's weird and a little trippy. That's not what you expect. But I think at this point, we see so many, like, moments in our day-to-day life that make us feel like we're living on, like, a reality show.
Yeah.
That, like, Lady Gaga doing NeurTech OTT commercials is kind of, like, fairly low on the totem pole of, like, what makes me go, like, what the fuck? But yeah, I definitely was like, this is interesting. Like, we are in an I do think, like, we are in, like, a currently very interesting era of Lady Gaga. Like, I think that is, like, undeniable, is that, like, the post-Chromatica Gaga era has been, like, truly strange. Truly strange.
There's been, I think, maybe a bit of a searching happening, or just a, you know, just like the day breaks and the night falls, Gaga goes through chapters, and we know that this everything is very temporary. And
1,000%.
I do also think we're in an era of celebrity where there's a bit of a blurred line between, like, what celebrities should and can do. Like, example being, I feel like when we were growing up, those types of commercials, you would never dare see certain, you know, Oscar winners be a part
of. It's so funny you're bringing that up, because I was thinking about this yesterday, which is, like, I remember watching on VH1, there was this whole special about, or not whole special, but there was this whole segment on one of the shows about how all of these A-list celebrities do commercials in China because it doesn't, like, affect their American clout.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, and their cachet. And it was, like, I remember watching, It's so funny bringing this up because I remember, I was thinking about this yesterday. Like, I vividly remember watching, like, a video of, like, Charlize Theron doing, like, a Nissan commercial in China.
Yeah.
And, like, Ben Stiller doing, like, a Nokia commercial in China. And how watching those back then felt so strange and felt like you were watching this crazy thing because it was so foreign to us for an A-lister to do ads like that. But now that's totally normal. Like, Tom Brady's doing fucking Hertz commercials. You know what I mean? And, like, Beyonce did a Verizon commercial. Like, Beyonce announced her second, announced Kelly Carter on a Verizon commercial. You know what I mean? It's like, that shit did not fucking happen 15 years ago. And it was so funny to think about that. Like, I vividly remember watching the Charlize Theron, I think it was like a Nissan commercial, and being like, it was like watching a dog walk on its hind legs. You're like, yeah. I was like, what? And now it would be totally normal. I mean, like, Charlize does the J'adore. I mean, I guess, like, perfume ads have always been a little bit more elevated. But, like, yeah, it's just so funny to think about what, like...
Well, when you said Beyonce did Verizon, I was like, no, she didn't. And then I was like, fully, that's a rave.
She dead-ass did.
Like, fully, like, how, it was, like, it was months ago. It wasn't even that long ago.
It was February. It was four months ago.
Yeah, it's a little bit of, like, for maybe a girl like me who has historically done a few commercials, or, like, for theater girls who it's like, oh, so you have to be an A-lister to now do a play on Broadway, or, you know, booking things like the celebrity, you know, that's a bit toof. But it is, I think, again, like, a sign of the times. Just like, I had not eaten inside a literal brick and mortar restaurant when we last spoke on this podcast, and now I'm here to tell the tale of Beyonce giving Can You Hear Me Now. Now, sadly, we don't have too much time left in this gay ass pod, so I just want to what I want to get us into is, as we love to manifest on this chaos podcast, we've talked about your DMs, we've talked about, you know, the show touring, but when it comes to your future romantically, what are you trying to manifest in terms of singledom versus coupledom? Are you enjoying your single days, or are we looking for LOVE?
I would say both. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, you know? I've very much been having a lot of fun and enjoying my independence and, like, my learning. I feel like my 30s are what, like, I thought my 20s were going to be. You know what I mean? Like, when I was a teenager, I was like, oh, like, well, I know who I am now. I'm able to go out and have fun. I have a little bit more money and freedom in that way. I've, like, kind of really come into my own in the XYZ ways, you know? I was in a relationship for most of my 20s, like, more than half of my 20s. And I think, like, not entering into something like that when you aren't fully cooked as a person is, like, hard. And I think for some people it works, but I think for me, I needed to then become single and finish cooking. And I think, not that I won't continue to evolve and grow and change over the rest of my life, but I think I've very much settled much more into, like, who I am, what I believe, what I stand for, what I care about, how I want to live my life. So on the one hand, it's like, so I'm very much enjoying singledom. It does mean that I think for finding someone, there's a little bit more of, like, the role has a few more, like, parameters now, because it's like, I like my life. I like who I am. I'm not really interested in, like, completely uprooting and changing my life or changing a lot of things to, like, onboard a person, make them my partner. That being said, I do want a partner. Like, in the long term, I do want a partner. I do want to have a husband. That is important to me. But I think it's more like, I'm not sitting here needing it. Yeah. I'm very happy on my own. And so when it comes down the pike and makes sense, it'll happen. But I'm not, like, hungrily, like, scavenging for it, you know?
Yeah, well, it also, what resonates with me is the idea of starting to date someone in your 20s is very, we don't talk about enough how difficult it is, I think, to grow as a singular person while in a relationship. And, you know, I can say this because Matt and I have been together for a billion years now, that, like...
Yeah, like, how long has it been? Over 10, right?
It'll be 11 in a few months.
That's amazing.
Like, well, I think the thing that I wish people were more honest about is, like, you know, we met when we were 24, I guess, 23, 24. And we, of course, had, like, the ups and downs in the first, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. But then we got married and it was, like, pretty, you know, really steady. And the pandemic started and we actually were really solid throughout the pandemic. But then when we moved to LA, after the first year, there was all of a sudden a period where I felt very like, oh, wait, we're like so growing into our own, but it does feel almost up at opposing angles.
Totally.
And so we, of course, started to go to a couples therapist because, you know, this girl loves therapy and Matt does as well. Thank God.
Yeah, that's great.
And so we started to like grow, really feel ourselves growing into our own as these adults in our 30s, but then starting to like bump heads because we're like, well, no, yeah, I'm proud of who I'm becoming. You, if you're proud of who you're becoming, but we're not agreeing, then how the fuck do we deal with that?
Totally.
And so it's like, it's just a risk, I think, when you start to date someone in your 20s, because you have to allow the mess of growing in opposite directions and just knowing that you're going to meet back up again.
Yeah.
Whereas on the opposite side of the same coin, when you're in your 30s, 40s and beyond and you're trying to date, you also have to know that the strength of who you are as an individual is going to be maybe tougher to find someone that you feel okay with sort of doing that, you know.
Yeah,
hand-to-hand.
Totally.
Hold, but it's also so exciting because you know who you are, what you are, and what you deserve. So
100%.
I'm fully on board with that, and I think it's a very refreshing take. So Jay Cornell, I love that you came back on this podcast.
I love that you had me anytime.
It's such a joy to talk to you, and I would love for everybody to see you across the country. And can you tell them where they can follow you and to get those ticks?
Yes, you can follow me at Jake W. Cornell on Instagram or TikTok. My website, jakecornell.com, has all of my live show dates. So far, I'll be in Burlington, D.C., Minneapolis, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Seattle, Los Angeles.
Jake.
I think I'm forgetting one.
Holy shit.
Did I say? Oh, San Francisco.
Oh.
So those tickets will all be on sale soon. And then I'm trying to add more cities as well. Check them out. Please grab tickets. If you know people in those cities, please tell them to grab tickets.
Yes.
Then, yeah, and Joe's Pub on July 8th still has tickets available. So grab those as well.
All right, everybody, go see Jake across the country and pray for his next appearance on the Gay Ass Pod soon.
Yes.
Jake, God bless you.
Love you. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. You heard it here first. Jake Cornell is going on the road, so make sure to follow him on social media. And of course, in the description, you can find the link for all of his channels and tickets there. As a reminder, I'm taking the month of July off from main episodes, but fear thee not. You still have gay ass episodes on the Patreon where we do gay ass sex diaries and more fun there. Go to patreon.com/gayasspodcast. Get your merch at gayasspodcast.com. These shirts are selling out, thank fucking God, because, you know, I took a risk in buying all that product. But grab yours there. And I will see you next week for another Pride Month ep. Stay gay.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.